Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Coffee Party Radio. This is Press One for Democracy with your host, Dan Erickson. This is Bobby Rodrigo, guest hosting for Dan this evening. Welcome to the show. And I want to let you know that to call in and participate, the number is 646-929-2495. Wanted to talk a little bit about activism, doing something about it, basically. I happened to be traveling last weekend. I was in New York, and one of the things about my home that I can honestly tell you is that we're an extremely patriotic city, and of course, any city, even where I live in Atlanta now, are going to be that way, of course, because they were around from the beginning. They were around when the Continental Congress was arguing about the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, and of course, we have all the reminders of that time, the historical sites that have been preserved, the Statue of Liberty, of course, which I got to see, and the red, white, and blue everywhere, of course, for the 4th of July, and all the events that were circling about it. So as this show is coming up, I thought it would be a good idea to both talk about, with all the situations that are going on in society, why we should be involved. And not just having discussions and debates on Facebook or on social media, and why we need to get out there and try and hold our government accountable and make it work for us. So I wrote a little piece about it, and then I wanted to talk about what inspired me, and then I want to bring in some people who are actually a couple of examples of why it is important to be an active activist and what made them do it. So I wanted to give a laundry list, essentially, of some of the reasons why I do what I do. It seems to me like these are issues that are affecting all of us. So, of course, for those who have heard me speak about these issues before, you'll recognize them. And just to pass them along, and I'd like you to think about them and see if they mean something to you. First of all, I abhor money in politics. I believe that corporate personhood is one of our biggest ills in our society. And then, of course, our government decided to pass a piece of legislation, and our president decided to sign the 2011 and 2012 National Defense Authorization Act, the NDAA. We also have the recent Supreme Court decision on the Voting Rights Act from 1965. And then our experience, especially in the last election cycle, of all the restrictive legislation and gerrymandering attacking voting rights in a number of states. We have the drone warfare issue and drone surveillance. We have due process and equal protection being removed by way of legislative acts, including the Patriot Act, which, of course, was such a prominent item in our news recently with the NSA, all the recent revelations of the NSA. And then, of course, our wonderful 1% media and how they try to form the debates in our society and don't cover all the issues either objectively or informatively. It's more important for them to polarize us, to have us arguing. And for example, when the Supreme Court was deciding the recent issues, like, for example, the Defense of Marriage Act, which is a wonderful decision by the Supreme Court, in my view. But there was also a number of important issues that were handed down by the Supreme Court relative to business. It seems like our court, our legislature, and of course our executive are doing so many things in our society that are on the side of business and not on the side of the individual. So I have a problem with that. I've had for a long time, and I just wanted to give a brief story as to what made me get back into activism. We all lived through the years up to and just after 9/11, which, of course, was devastating. And then, of course, we had the wars that weren't paid for by our government, regardless of who, what party was at fault of it. Because, of course, you know, I'm about facts. The party and the party blame is not important. It's about facts. And then, of course, we ran into an economic crisis, which, in my view, was caused by a number of issues: the housing bubble, the repeal of Glass-Steagall, which, of course, happened during the Clinton years, and being a business owner myself and being in construction, I felt it immensely, as did everybody in our country. And then 2008 rolls along, and we have these a new election coming up. We know we're going to have a new administration. We know we're probably going to have a shift in Congress just because of the ill wills of our society. And I happened to be watching television, and I caught the miniseries about John Adams, which I come from the generation that essentially miniseries started at. We started with Rich Man, Poor Man, and then Roots came out, which, of course, was a wonderful, monumental learning experience for our country. And, John, so when miniseries come out, I tend to pay attention to them. And this particular one came up, and I've always been a fan of John Adams, even from a child. And I watched it intently because I, in a way, had forgotten how much President Adams had to do with the declaring of independence by this country. He was the loudest voice in our Continental Congress, and he actually was responsible, along with Benjamin Franklin, in recruiting Thomas Jefferson to write in the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. He actually was the person who nominated George Washington, President Washington, to be the general of the armies. And a lot of this has been passed. He's not on Mount Rushmore. He, for some reason, his popularity, or maybe not popularity is not the right word, but I watched it, and it was riveting. They covered it very well. They covered the letters between him and Jefferson very well, very accurately. Those things are easy enough to find. So when it was over with, it made me pay attention that much more as to why we were around. And I immediately started to get involved. I paid attention to our elections. I started paying a lot more attention to our 1% media. I started getting tired of watching polarization and no facts, and watching our elected officials not do what their constituents voted them in to do, not keeping their word. And this is all the way up to the president, all the way down. When President Obama took office, the first thing I noticed was that he nominated Tom Daschle for his cabinet. And, of course, Tom Daschle and his wife were lobbyists at that time. His wife is a member of one of the biggest lobbyist firms ever created in the history of the world, and yet I was looking for change. So the disappointment started in that vein, and then our 1% media and all the things that happened since then, and the way the Tea Party, what was supposed to be a grassroots organization, got involved with money, and how money's been shaping everything. So I wanted to do a show about getting people motivated to actually do something. It's something that we at the Coffee Party talk about a lot. All the shows, Lunch with Loudon, Politics Done Right, The Middle Ground, when Dan Harrison is here, one of his questions is that if you could do three things to fix something, what would they be? We really need to get involved. And of course, my generation is the one that did a lot of this ruination. And, you know, we want to make sure that our the next generation is involved in correcting what is happening. So I wanted to do a show about that, and I wanted to invite some people on to talk about how they got into activism, and the issues that they're currently supporting. So I have with us tonight, I invited two people to be on the show. Dan Johnson, who is the head of PANDA, which is People Against the NDAA, and Matthew Monk, who is the creator of ESMORP, which is actually, to make it simple, is promise spelled backwards, and there's a reason for that, and I'll let Matthew get into that. And these are examples of why our youth is inspiring me and keeping me involved, and just more reason why we should step out and do something about what our government is doing to us. Please call in with questions and participation, questions for Dan or Matthew. Again, the number is 646-929-2495. I guess I should turn on the chat room as well and see what's going on in there. And I also have Debbie Lynn Molyneux with us, a wonderful coffee party host for Lunch in Loudoun, and also helps on Press One with Democracy constantly. So hello, Debbie Lynn.
Hi there. How are you doing tonight, Robert?
I'm good. It's been hectic, but I'm glad to be here. I'm glad you're with me, so you can make sure I don't fall off a cliff. And
backup is always good.
Yes. Keep the rope. I can hold on. I promise.
Yep.
And how was your weekend? How was the holiday?
It was good. You know, I have a dog, and so I don't really enjoy the fireworks as much as I used to.
Mm.
So we went out into the countryside on a 20-acre farm and tried to hunker down, and we got through it.
So. Well, that's good. I took my son with me to New York, and I wanted to. I was trying to pick a spot to watch the Macy's fireworks, which apparently was put on by Usher, which I haven't figured that out yet, but they were very good. But anyway, so I decided, out of the three or four places that I was looking at, I said, well, let's do the Empire State Building. So I look, you know, and you got to buy a ticket. And then I wound up into buying a different ticket, which kept me off of the observation deck of the Empire State Building during the time that the fireworks was actually going on. So we rush down the stairs, down the elevator, of course, hop into a cab and rush across over the Hudson River, get out, walk a couple blocks, and actually just stand by the water and watch the fireworks, which is what we should have done in the first place. So we got to see the fireworks,
yep.
And that was nice.
Yep. I was getting really motivated there, or you know, curious about the talking about all the miniseries and stuff that you were watching when you were a kid. And, you know, listening to you. I mean, I watched all of the same ones. And I did get the John Adams clip queued up for you if you want me to hit play on
it. Oh, please. So what we have here, I had asked everyone to help me. I wanted to play a piece from that miniseries. And it is about 30 seconds. Mr. Adams, right before the vote for independence, Mr. Dickinson of Pennsylvania had spoken about the fact that this war, this revolution, was going to be happening at their front door, that we were going to be fighting for this country in front of our homes, on our land, with our children, with our parents, it was going to be fought in our country. And he was very cautious, and though he believed in the cause, he didn't believe in fighting England in quite that way. He didn't want to see the death. He was a Quaker, his approach was more to wait and to send letters into protest, which had been done. And Mr. Adams, of course, was of the opposite view. And this is a piece from his speech in front of the Continental Congress to inspire the vote for independence. Debbie Lynn?
Here we go.
My judgment approves this measure, and my whole heart is in it. All that I am, and all that I hope in this life, I am now ready to stake upon it. While I live, let me have a country. A free country.
And I thought that was a very, very powerful speech that he gave, of course. And what had happened then is that Mr. Dickinson feigned illness, so because he would have been the person casting the vote for Pennsylvania. And Ben Franklin passed the vote for Pennsylvania support, and so we had 12 states that voted aye, and New York abstained because they had the English fleet in the harbor. And that is how we declared independence And again, that is one of the reasons that got me back into it, of all things, into activism. So I want to bring in our first guest. Dan Johnson is with us. I want to introduce him. As I mentioned in the blog and earlier in the show, that he is the founder and the organizer and the president for the People Against the NDAA. And I'm sure I'm saying it not exactly the way I should, but I work with Daniel. I am very inspired by him. He's a brilliant young man, and I'm going to bring him on right now. Hey, Dan, how are you?
I'm doing good, Robert. Thanks for having me on the show.
Certainly, certainly. So, Daniel, I want you to talk about yourself. I will start there, and then we can both discuss being an active activist, and of course the very, very important issue of the National Defense Authorization Act of 2011 and 2012. So, everybody in Coffee Party Radio Land, this is Daniel Johnson.
All right, so talk a little bit, introducing the NDAA. The NDAA is the National Defense Authorization Act. It is authorized by our Congress to fund the military for about 51 years now. It's going to be 52 years of NDAA 2014. And it usually just funds the military. That's all the bill is designed to do. But because it's a huge piece of legislation, a very tempting piece of legislation, in 2012, they snuck sections 10.2.1 and 10.2.2 in there. And these sections essentially authorize the military to indefinitely detain, without a charge, without a trial, any person, whether an American citizen or not, who is merely suspected of terrorism or commits what would be known as a belligerent act, or any number of factors that include essentially everyone. And it brings back memories, obviously not my memories, I'm not old enough for that, but of the internment of Japanese Americans in World War II, of 110,000 of them to boot, without a charge and trial. And essentially this law does the same thing as Executive Order 9066 did. It applies the laws of war to American soil, and now, according to Lindsey Graham, we're a battlefield. And he's one of the biggest proponents of the bill, and that bill makes America a battlefield.
And how did you first become aware of this particular issue?
I blame my friend for this, because he introduced me to StumbleUpon, which is probably the greatest tool for procrastination in the history of existence. But I was procrastinating homework. We had some sort of an exam coming up in college, and I had politics as one of my interests. And I came across a video, 63 Senators Betrayed You Today. And I remember watching that video and going, you've got to be kidding me. Really? In America? Is this happening? And I decided to do a little more research into it, but I saw it was a YouTube video. It was social media. It was the internet. It was the greatest source of open information in history that really brought that to my realization, because if it were not for the internet, I'd probably still be in college studying for an exam or studying for a test at this point.
Amazing. Amazing. So when you saw that and it made you do the research, what did you do from there? How did you get inspired? Or I know how you got inspired. Actually, let me rephrase that. What were the mechanics behind creating People Against the NDAA, PANDA?
Well, I kind of did whatever I could to try to stop this. So I saw the parallels between this and Nazi Germany and was just amazed. And so I decided that I would do whatever I could to stop it from happening here in America. And I started with a Facebook, a Twitter, and a small YouTube video that I made, that I recorded and put up online. and just started telling as many people as I can about it. I must have posted on every single one of my friends' Facebook walls. I was continually tweeting hashtag NDAA, meeting and connecting with people who were also against the law. And it was really just determination and willpower that was the catalyst for bringing this about. It started with social media, and then I connected with a student group on campus, the Ron Paul 2012 group on campus, Young Americans for Liberty, and talked with them several times. They fronted for us. The Ohio Oath Keepers helped us get started, and we took 21 students to the Bowling Green City Council from both the Tea Party and Occupy to the Bowling Green City Council, and the catalyst for the national organization was getting rejected at a local level. It was essentially having my mayor told me to go back to school, learn something new before you come in here and play with the big boys. And, you always have that person in your life who told you you couldn't do it, and they were the reason you did. And my city council and my mayor was that person.
Amazing. And just so we take this in perspective, everybody, you know, here we have a situation where a young man, and the age, it doesn't really matter. First of all, Daniel Johnson is 20 years old, so let me put that out there right now. So the reason I wanted to have him on is to let our young listeners know, and let all our listeners know, that it doesn't matter how old you are. It matters what you do. It matters how you react to what you see, because this is an issue that affects us all. It is across the spectrum. It doesn't matter if you're progressive, if you're conservative, if you're a member of the Justice Party or the Green Party or the Tea Party or the Call. It doesn't matter what you're a member of. You can be indefinitely detained in our country, period, on the arbitrary whims of a member of the executive. And it goes beyond that. And I'll let Daniel talk about some more of that as we get into the show. But for the purposes of what we're talking about right now, you basically have somebody who sees something who he's pretty sure it's wrong. He goes and looks at it and finds out that it's wrong. Then he tries to bring it to the attention of his local elected officials, and they tell him, tough, or you can't play with us, or you're not smart enough, or meanwhile, even though the age thing isn't important, Daniel's a voter. So we're talking about, and he's bringing a voting block with him. This is such an important thing that's going on in society. Now, I work with Daniel a lot, and I can tell you that we are pushing this issue just like we're pushing other liberty based issues, and I also point out to our viewers as well another aspect so important, that this is factual. This is not a bunch of people that are talking about an opinion. We have an act, a legislative act, that was written by our government, signed into law by our president, is being litigated in federal court as we speak. So everybody can go and look it up and find out for themselves, one, that it exists and it says what we're saying it says, and two, that the media is not talking about it, which is just as much a reason why we're here as anything else, to make sure everybody understands what is going on. Wouldn't you agree, Dan?
I agree, absolutely. Not just to make sure that everyone understands what's going on, but also to make sure that something like what happened in 1942 does not happen again in America. And it's kind of cool. A lot of people talk about the NDAA and the lack of media attention on an issue, and a advantage to an issue that's not often brought up about the lack of media attention. We get to define the issue. The issue has not been defined as a partisan. For example, the Affordable Care Act has been defined as a partisan issue, whether it is or not. It has been defined as a partisan issue because there's so much media coverage on it. But we get to define the issue on the NDAA, and I think in a lot of ways, at least that makes it easier to fight. And I'm really glad to have people like yourself and people like our team to work alongside with us in fighting this. And for all the young activists out there, you guys are paying attention. I'm glad you guys are listening to this radio show. The Coffee Party has been one of our staunchest allies from the very beginning. It was actually the first radio show I ever went on was Don Manning's show here on the Coffee Party.
Oh, sure, Don Manning. I used to be on in this time slot, I believe, right here, if I'm not mistaken.
Something, it must have been something like that.
I'm pretty sure it was Monday evening. Yeah, I remember. I was on his show as well. That's excellent. Excellent. Very, very good man, actually.
Yeah, and so I'm glad you guys are all listening, but one of the things that a young activist needs to understand is that it takes both generations. It doesn't only take both parties, it also takes both generations. And one of the things that I really love about Panda and about working with people like Robert and people who are not necessarily of my generation is they bring the experience to the table that myself as a young activist would have fallen into so many traps and made so many wrong decisions had I not had mentors who were older than I was. And so for those young activists out there, one of the key parts of putting an activist organization together as a young guy or as a young girl is to reach out to those organizations who have experience in your area and not only reach out to them, but to also work directly with people who have the experience, because that's what really kept Panda from making a lot of mistakes and what really made sure that we were propelled to where we need to be. And I'd have to call out the Patriot Coalition and really thank them for all the help that they gave us.
Absolutely. Applause, applause. You know, it made me think of something. I actually had wrote an email to somebody that you and I are working with involving the United We Stand Fest. And I was at a party on Saturday by a friend of mine who I've known since first grade. And it was his 26th annual 4th of July barbecue. And prior to eating, of course, he said a few words and give thanks, et cetera. And one of the things he said that struck a chord with me, that because everything is striking a chord with me, activism-wise, is we were there. There was essentially four generations. Our parents, which would be generation number one, us, our children, and then there was a number of grandchildren. We had four generations at this party. And you know, he's not somebody that I sit around and spend a lot of time talking politics with or anything, but it was beautiful to hear him say, we have to make our world better for our next generation, and we want to show them how to be together to do it and fix some of the things that are out there. Yeah, you know, and we have to do that. We just have to do that. There's just too much. There's too much going on, as I mentioned, the laundry list earlier. And then you and I have talked many times about the various liberty issues that are on there. And of course, the Panda is a single issue activist organization, but it's not at the same time. It is going after that and should be, but at the same time, it crosses over with so many other organizations, Coffee Party being one, of course, Free and Equal Election Foundation being another. So right there you have three to where Panda can stay singular but pass on the liberty message as well. It's very, very important. So what I'd like you to do, Daniel, is to talk about some of the things that are coming up that you're involved with so people can pay attention and join.
Absolutely, absolutely. One of the cool things that's coming up with us, or actually we're working on right now, I'm not sure if anyone's familiar with a reporter named Ben Swan. But Ben Swan has a very good record of serious reporting and constitutional reporting because, you know, the press is the only industry specifically mentioned in the Constitution. And
correct.
As the Constitution was designed to limit government, the press is therefore designed to limit government and must be always attempting to limit government. And Ben Swan really seems to fit the characteristics. So working with him, as imagine you're a mainstream reporter and you get an interview with the president, what kind of questions would you ask him? Well, most mainstream reporters, softball questions. They want to get in the president's good graces, so they're asking him softball questions. Not Ben Swan. Got one interview with the president, ask them about the NDAA, the war in Syria, and the kill list in about 10 minutes. And so we're wholeheartedly supporting his Truth in Media project. You can go to benswan.com and check that out. That's one of the big things we're really looking at. Another thing is Oregon is on fire against the NDAA. Multiple counties in Oregon are taking on the NDAA, and I'll be actually heading out to Oregon I'll be out there on the 15th, speaking at a town hall in front of several different groups. And it's really kind of funny because there's environmental activist groups in Oregon who did the kind of hanging in trees so that the loggers couldn't cut them down.
Sure, that happened many times.
And then there's conservative groups in Oregon, and I hate to separate people, these guys, but there's quote-unquote conservative Tea Party-style groups in Oregon, and they're the ones advocating for cutting down the trees. Yet both of these groups agree the NDAA is an egregious piece of legislation, and they're willing to come together to fight it.
And then, of course, that brings them to the table to discuss other issues as well. Again, crossing the lines. It's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
And you're
going to
be speaking at the... go ahead. I'm sorry.
Another big thing we're looking forward to is the United We Stand Fest out in Los Angeles, California. Coming up this October, UnitedWeStandFest.com, put on by Free and Equal Elections. United We Stand Fest is going to be huge. We're bringing some of the best and the top musicians in. We got Saving Abel. Those of you who know, I'm not going to sing their songs because I can't sing. So you'll have to find them out. You'll have to Google them yourself. Tatiana Moroz and The Siren, an MTV featured artist, inventor of Chill Step. Some big, big names, and also big names in speaking in liberty movement, like Jesse Ventura, Jill Stein, Gary Johnson, several others who are really coming together and saying, you know what, we agree with John Adams when he said, there is nothing I dread so much as the division of the Republic into two great parties, each arranged under its leader, and concerting measures in opposition to each other. This, in my humble apprehension, is the greatest political evil under our Constitution. And he was right. Both parties voted for the NDAA. Both parties continually vote to strip your rights from you. If you drop the words national security, to give you an idea of how much both parties were ready to take your liberty, SOPA. I'm sure many of us, mm-hmm. younger activists out there remember SOPA, the Stop Online Piracy Act. The House and Senate were ready to send SOPA to the president's desk. It was a bill that would have allowed internet websites to be censored and taken down, violating free speech in so many ways that it's impossible to count them all. And both parties were on board with this. That's how much both parties are willing to strip your rights. And so taking an issue like NDAA and bringing We the People together, the only parties that are divided right now are We the People. We the People are divided. The Republican and Democrat parties, Democrat, Republicrat. we're talking.
So what's going on?
We're talking two parties. Right now, it's We the People against the two-party system. That's what it is. And so if We the People can come together against an issue like NDAA that's so crucial and so core to our very values and very principles of our nation, then we can come together on another issue. We can come together on another issue. We can cast off the shackles of divide and conquer and realize that not only are the people who may believe different than us on other issues not our enemy, but also that it only took 3%. There's militias out there now called 3%ers, and they're named after the 3% who participated in the American Revolution. Only 3%. And if we the people can get a vocal minority of 3% to fight back and to stand for liberty and to stand for freedom and to stand for the Constitution, we can take back this nation. I know I'm on a rant, but I'll go on one more point. It doesn't matter whether we quote-unquote win or lose, because we can't lose. Nathan Hale, in all respects, lost. He was hung by the British.
That's
right. He said, "I regret that I have but one life to live for my country." And though he was hung by the British, and in all sense of the word, as he was killed, in all sense of the word, he quote-unquote lost, we still look to him as an inspiration today. He was only 20 years old. We still look to him as an inspiration today for the revolution of today, for the peaceful and the intellectual revolution of today. We can't lose unless we never fight. That's the only way we can lose, is if we never enter the ring. And for all the listeners out there, it does not matter the battles we win, the battles we lose. What matters is that we do what's right, because that way we never can lose. Never let somebody tell you, "Well, this bill won't pass, so we'll never get that passed. Why would we ever introduce it? Oh, we'll never get that idea passed then. Why would we ever talk about it? Oh, that's too radical. Oh, that's too crazy." Guess what? It doesn't matter whether we win or lose. What matters is that we did the right thing. And that's the way we win.
So true. And thank you for that. Just to add on to what you were talking about as far as acts are concerned and how the two parties, the system needs to be dealt with. Of course, as you mentioned, SOPA, we had CISPA. Same thing almost happened with that. And then, of course, all of this revelation about the NSA is from the Patriot Act, which was overwhelmingly bipartisan, that you could not, only one senator voted against it the first time around, for example, and only 12 voted against it the last time around, just in 2011. It is extremely nonpartisan, or whatever that is that they call it over there. I don't even believe in the word aisle anymore. It's either you have money or you don't at this point. And then you add the money aspect to what you're talking about. And I read something this morning, as a matter of fact, on how since 2004, I think it's right, and I'll double-check it because I don't like to be inaccurate, but the wealth of Mitch McConnell went from like $3 million to $24 million while he's serving in the Senate. Now, I'm not saying he's doing anything wrong. I'm not saying he's not doing anything wrong, but that sure is a lot of money to be making when you're supposed to be working for the people. So what is it that you're really doing? You know, how are you putting together this vast empire? Well, and mind you, please, this is not an attack on a party. This is across the board. We have nothing but a bunch of millionaires in Congress, and there's a reason for that, because they weren't all millionaires when they got there. So what are they really working for? Who are they really working for? That is much as an aspect. And one more thing on when you mentioned the United Stamp Act, I can't tell everybody. I also work with Free and Equal Elected Foundation, and Ziggy Marley is confirmed, Public Enemy is confirmed, Nas is confirmed, Lupe Fiasco is confirmed. To add to the wonderful entertainment list that we have for the event on UCLA campus.
Man, you guys have to update that website sometime between now.
Yes,
and then.
Yes, absolutely, and absolutely. I keep saying these things. And of course, that's happening. I'm allowed to say that, I guess, is the way to put that. So certainly everybody needs to be involved in that. Dan, if you can, I'd like you to stick around for a little while. Let me do a coffee party civic message here. Anybody who wants to jump in and ask some questions, participate in the show, bring up another subject, please do. Please call in at 646-929-2495. It's Press 1 for Democracy. We are here with Daniel Johnson, just speaking about PANDA and the Liberty Movement, as well as the importance of being an active activist. And we also have another guest that we wanted to bring on to speak about more about being an active activist and what inspired him to do it, as well as what is he doing today to bring up his issues and the issues that are important to all of us as well. I'd like to introduce Matthew Monk to us, and let me see if I can get that on there. And there you are, Matthew, your mic is on. Say hi.
All right. Thank you, Bobby, and thank you, Daniel, for all your
very insightful perspective. I really want to thank you, though, for accepting my friend request while you were giving your monologue. That's pretty badass. So, I think that's, for all the listeners out there, that's about, as good as it gets. But, yeah, I think I've been on Coffee Party Radio a few times now. And for those that are listening, my name is Matthew Monk. I'm out of Baltimore, Maryland, and I'm 17 years old.
Say that again, please.
I am 17, and I started doing this about 2.5 years ago. I went to a forum about marriage equality, and I met with one of the people who was sitting, two chairs down from me. I was on the panel, and he and a few other people and I gathered in a room, and what came out of that discussion was something called the Essamore Coalition, which is an acronym for Empowering Successful Innovative Movements Organized to Redistribute Power, and coincidentally, it's also promise spelled backwards, which is kind of, a neat allusion to Dr. King's, last speech. And for the past 2 years, I've been the lead organizer of Essamore Baltimore, the local organizing group. We had about 20 organizers working with us over here. And we were also developing groups across the country. I am actually going to be stepping down as the Baltimore lead organizer effective this August, but I'm still going to be the Essamore's national chief organizer. But on top of that, I've been working with Bobby and several other people across the country, from the cacti of Phoenix to the cobblestone streets of Providence, to the hot town of Houston and in southern Maryland and out here in Baltimore and people all across this great country, we're developing a new national association of organizing projects, which is, exciting. And, a lot of the old Essamore people have come on this initiative. So it's really neat to have seen two organizations in the works that are going to be structured along the same lines, but working collectively to effectuate social, economic, and environmental change. I can, really do nothing but echo what Daniel and what Bobby has said thus far in saying that this work is not easy, and it's not made any easier when you're young. But I think, and I can tell you, I have activists who, won't even speak to me, won't even, answer my phone calls. I keep a Facebook note that someone sent to me close so that I can read it for my own humor, and in which someone said, go get an internship somewhere. it's tough. But I have to say, being the victim of ageism is nothing like being the victim of homophobia, Islamophobia, anti-Semitism, racism, or sexism. So, I'm willing to take on the fight. And I think, when you look at it, this country has so much potential. And really, people all around the world, there is so much potential to have a socially, economically, and environmentally just society. And I think that, within the context of this global democracy movement, and within the context of coming out of the Obama era, which has not been as progressive as we would have liked it to be, but I think that has ignited many of us in getting involved. I think the future is one full of hope, and in addition to hope, it's one full of action. I think that, we're getting ready to march again in this country, and that's a really good thing. And that's what, both Essamore and this new organization, which is still forming, should have a name within the next, you know, 60 days are working towards. And, you know, it's really important that I think that in doing this, that we be mindful of the fact that we have to reach for a broader goal, and that's been the goal of these two organizations. I'm very careful to guide the organizers not to focus on one issue and to devote themselves towards one cause, because at some point there will be a victory, and we have to be cognizant of all the issues because, quite frankly, they're all related with each other. And I think that it would be a great thing for this country to have a you know, two new multi-issue groups coming from the grassroots that are based on their communities, and whose national agenda is derived from the needs of its local groups. And I think, you know, because of the corporate interests, even the progressive groups sometimes seem to be impositional in that they are bringing down issues for which their local organizers are supposed to work for. And I think that the most important point that I can bring to this discussion, and this is one for which I really am very passionate about it. And Bobby can attest is that we talked about this on our conference call for our organization last night. We cannot be divided. If we allow ourselves to be divided by our race, by our gender, by our sexual orientation, or if we, you know, choose to be afraid to work with certain organizations, you know, because of past history or things of that nature, while such conflict is, you know, expected from human beings, we need to do everything in our power to resist it, because we cannot be divided in the face of corporate interests. That is what they want us to do. And as a people and as a movement of people, we need to, you know, put some skin in the game, swallow some of our pride when it comes to, you know, working with certain people. And I'll admit, there are people in the progressive movement I don't particularly care for myself, but, you know, that's, you know, there's plenty of people in Baltimore, but, you know, we work together and we get things done. And I think, you know, if we apply that attitude, we can be a real force for change. And in doing that, we can start to see that our movement extends beyond the point of, you know, people working on the ground. But you know, when we really become organized in that way, we begin to elect our own leaders. And those people have taken the movement to wherever, you know, they are, whether they're in a legislature or an executive position somewhere. I mean, in the real tradition of John Lewis, and I think that, you know, we have to be, in approaching the change-making process, we have to be cooperative, as I said, we have to be inclusive, we have to be multi-issue, and we have to be, you know, willing to, not necessarily to overthrow the government or to radicalize the government, but to permeate the government, because the government belongs to us. And if we want to make change, we have to inspire people like us to stand up and make that change. So I think that, you know, these things come from, can be done from a number of different ways. And I think that we're all, you know, we're seeing that kind of happen right now. And I'm you know, all very excited about this. I think we're going in a, you know, a very positive direction. I think that this country has made a leftward leap, you know, in terms of its social and its economic and environmental conscience. And I think that, you know, we just need to be the facilitators of this new school of thought. And I have no doubt that we can do it. And I, you know, for everyone that's listening out there, I invite you to figure out how you can become involved. If you want to contact me, my email address is matthew.monk, that's M-U-N-K at yahoo.com. So I'm expecting all you people that are, you know, sitting there watching this a day later to give me an email now, all right? Yeah, that's right.
Absolutely. And you guys are doing friendships and stuff in real time. Everybody else can be doing that as well. I see that we have a caller 561. I'll bring you on here in just a second. I wanted to just bring up a couple of things based upon what the two of you were talking about. You know, while we talk about people working together and the important issues that are going on, there seems to be certain things that our government is doing across the board. One of the things I've noticed is they seem to be removing due process from our lives, I guess is the simplest way of putting it. You know, a lot of people, I think, miss about what's going on with the NSA, for example, is what the Patriot Act, in fact, did was not create a law that said, you know, the Patriot Act didn't create FISA, for example, Foreign Intelligence Act, where the government was given permission by way of secret court, which was, in fact, a due process, to obtain warrants to, you know, gather up intelligence. What the Patriot Act did, which is what's crucial, and I keep talking about this over and over again, half for years, is that it removed the requirement for due process for acts that were previously written that required it because our 4th, 5th, 6th, and 14th Amendments require it. I say that because, again, when you look at, for example, the National Defense Organization Act of 2011-2012, what it is that they've done is that they've removed due process from a detention process. It is a lot more to that act than just that. But that seems to be a common thing that's going on. Our legislature and our executive and our courts, for that matter, are eliminating core values, and some of the things that we're talking about here cover that as well. And before you guys comment on that, I want to bring in 561 if they have a question for a comment, what they would like to talk about. Let me bring them on. Area code 561, what's your name and where are you calling from and what would you like to say?
Oh, is that me? Oh, I apologize. I just wanted to listen. I'm just I really have nothing to say. I just want to listen to you guys.
Oh, okay, great. Well, let me stay and listen. And I thought your hand was up, and that's my fault because, you know, I'm a rookie here. And
I just dialed in.
So.
No, you're fine. No, you're fine. Your hand wasn't up. We have ways of knowing this, and I'm not paying attention. I'm just excited to be here. let me mute you.
Well, we're excited to have you, Bobby.
Well, I do tend to agree with a lot of what Matthew, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yes, me.
Yeah, Matthew. I do tend to agree with a lot of what you said. A couple points of interest that I might maybe bring a little bit of perspective from. As someone who has definitely been targeted, ridiculed, et cetera, for my age, I refuse to see myself as a victim of anything. Victim is defined in the dictionary as a few definitions. One of them is being sacrificed. Obviously, neither of us are being sacrificed in a religious right. I hope. it's one that's being injured or destroyed or sacrificed under any various conditions or one that is tricked or duped. And I refuse to consider myself a victim. What I kind of look at it is there was a guy's T-shirt I was walking behind sometime, probably put it very succinctly, said, if you ain't doing nothing, you ain't got no haters. And it really alludes to a larger concept, and it's not so much you are the victim. It's much like when you take crabs out of the ocean, out of the ocean, you put one lobster in a bucket, it'll climb out. If you put two lobsters in the same bucket, the lobsters will continue pulling each other back into the bucket, pulling each other down. And if you put 10 or 15 lobsters, they will all pull anyone who tries to get out of the bucket down into it. And so I kind of see it as we are not the victims. We're winning. We're raising our head above the crowd. We're making a difference. I am not the victim of anyone's actions besides my own. And those are actions I take responsibility for. But if, and I don't mean to hammer on it necessarily, but I don't really see myself as a victim. I see myself as a victor. And that's the reason they're throwing tomatoes at me. If I was a victim, they wouldn't be throwing tomatoes at me. If I was doing something challenging the status quo, that's when they're throwing tomatoes at me. And so I really see myself as a victim, or not as a victim, as a victor in this fight, because we are winning. Polls are showing it. People are waking up left and right. And the cool thing about the movement toward liberty and the movement toward respecting individual rights is we're seeing people come into the movement and they don't leave. Because once you realize that you have rights and need to be respected, you don't forget that. you can be a Democrat and then a Republican, and then a Republican and a Democrat. But when you realize you have God-given unalienable rights, according to our Declaration of Independence, then you don't go back from that. And so we continually gain people while they continually lose people. And as long as this trend continues, and people out there maybe, I hear this every single time I bring in on a new state leader. And one of our state leaders was just published in a New York newspaper. Every time I bring on a state team leader, well, you know, I don't have any political experience. I've never been involved in politics before. I've never done anything like that before. If you don't take the first step, you can never begin the journey. And it doesn't take someone who knows what they're doing. It takes someone with the willpower to do it. I didn't know what I was doing. I started Panda back when I was 18. I didn't know what I was doing getting into it. But I decided I'm going to pour my heart and soul into this organization. And since that point, 21 college students getting told to go back to school by our mayor. We have grown the largest organization in the nation fighting the NDAA. Every one of you out there can do it too. This is how revolutions start. This is how revolutions form. One person says, enough. I refuse to live in a world where I cannot look at a 3-year-old, where I cannot look at a 2-year-old, where I cannot look at someone younger than I am and look them in the eye and say, you're free. I refuse to live in a world where I cannot do that. And that's what it takes. When you refuse to live in that world and you say, I've had enough, that is when you'll start making change, not when you wait for all the lights to go green.
Nice, very nicely said. Matthew, you want to discuss what Dan was just talking about? And then we can talk about some of the other issues that we're dealing with.
Well, yeah. I mean, I want to clarify, I never said I was the victim. But, you know, I mean, I would be a fool to say that I have not experienced ageism. and
sure.
I think the isms are a very real thing that we have to think about. I hear what this gentleman is saying. I think he's made some interesting points. I think that, you know, I agree with the point of involvement and empowerment. I think those are values which are on the rise, and they're becoming parts of our national conscience again, and they haven't been for probably, you know, the 90s and the early part of this century, but that has come about again. I think that's a good thing. In addition to that, though, I would add that more important than the idea for and the belief in individual rights is the belief, and this is also very much an American ideal, but one must understand that our country was founded as a dichotomy of individual rights and community rights. And as a community organizer, right, I take a great interest in the rights of the community, the rights of the collective. And I think, you know, everyone has rights to, you know, to things like a safe environment, a strong society, public education. And oftentimes those things, you know, come about because of the individual's collective effort as an organized body. So I think this you know, this gentleman has made some good points. I think, you know, many of them are very valid and very articulate. And I would just add that in addition to supporting individual rights, which I, you know, am very much in favor of, you know, we also need to be cognizant of the fact that we have rights, the communities have rights, and that we have an obligation to others around us to be a good neighbor and to work with them and to build a just community and neighborhood and society and world with them. I mean, that's something that is also becoming more prevalent in our society, but we need to keep hitting home with that so that people can really, you know, understand that because that's a real values change. That's a real shift. Or really more of a, oh yeah, we forgot about that. Now we remember it again. But I think that's something that's just a point that I would add to what he was saying.
And I think this discussion is a good example of two people who maybe come from different points. Because, and I would absolutely love Robert in the future if you could bring myself and him on to talk about individual versus collective rights, because I have a very different opinion on that, and not necessarily what the show is about. But with regard to individual rights and regard to the kind of discussion we're having here, I think this perfectly illustrates how we as America need to move forward. I'm not saying his mother's ugly. I'm not going out and attacking him and saying, well, he said the wrong thing at this time, and that means he's going to be bad for America. No. We wholeheartedly disagree on especially the last point.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a perfect example of how two people can debate something and bring something to the table
and
that
together.
Otherwise would not be brought to the table by constant fighting back and forth and essentially just ad hominem attacks against each other. And this is an example of and I'm sure I'll work with your organization in the past, or in the future, Matthew. I'm sure we'll work together on different issues that we do kind of concur on, and I'm sure we'll both have open minds with each other. And that right there is a perfect illustration of how we can put aside any kind of partisanship that either of us might have and work together, because if we don't, we're not going to have a country left in 15 years.
Well, you know, this expounds on something that I've been talking about recently as well. The way that we debate, the way that we go about trying to get done what is best for our society is properly done when it's all working correctly by voting. And if our hearts, minds are into it, and we understand how our government was set up to work, then we're not going to win every vote for the issues that we as individuals like. It's just not going to work that way. And it shouldn't, and we should never want it to, but we should certainly be able to have a discussion as to why I think this way, why I think that way. When the 2008 elections were happening, one of the things that I was telling everybody, besides the fact that I was looking at the dais and I was going, this is what I have to choose from, was when we fix the money, just an example of an issue, when we fix the money, then please come and talk to me about ideology, because the money is something that is common for all of us, for us to at least talk about, even if we don't like fixing it the same way. It's still something that has to be done. The economy is still something that has to be done. The NDAA is still something that has to be done. Environmental justice, absolutely. On my laundry list, for example, that I did not even put on there, and I didn't notice it until right before the show, was what's going on with Monsanto and the non-GMO. And our food situation in this country. My great niece happens to be in Spain right now doing credits this summer, and some friends of mine also had their son there for this past semester. And the two of them have said that one of the things that they noticed was that in Spain they don't have organic food because it's all real and organic. And I say to people, you know what your parents used to call organic food? It was food. It didn't have to have a title before because nobody was messing with it the way they're messing with it now. So there's a myriad of subjects that we have. I know that the two of you, for example, and other people on the show that listen in or that that we interact with together know that one of my strongest issues that I have are with drones. And again, it's another issue where they have eliminated due process from the equation. I actually went to a seminar for the American Constitutional Society of Law and Policy, which I'm a member. And I sat there along with another activist friend of mine, Mike Smith, from the Georgia Activist that I belong to. And I sat there and I listened to a law professor tell me how essentially the Constitution doesn't come into play as the most prominent piece of law in this country when there's a war situation. And, you know, it was very hard to stay in my seat when I heard a law professor say that, trying to tell me that the Constitution somehow is not the most prevalent legal document or our government essentially is thrown out of the picture because I'm happen to be at war and because the rules of war, because nobody remembers that the fact that we have the Supremacy Clause, which eliminates all of that. You know, and that brings me to another point, gentlemen, is one of the things that I love about our legal model is that even though there are arguments that say that the Constitution was written by an elitist because of the slavery aspect of it, or the fact that they were, I mean, a lot of them were rich, or landowners, or whatever the reasons, my response always to that is that, well, I guess they just did a really good job because any time something happens that is prominent in our society, it bumps into itself. It goes round and round, and it just bumps right into itself because it gives us a way to solve the problem. And of course, freedom of speech, the right to redress our government for redress of grievances are prominent in what we're trying to do. The fact that we are supposed to have due process and a specific, the fact that the press, as Daniel mentioned earlier, is the only organization that is in there, in the Constitution, for example. All of these things matter, which means that the Constitution itself just keeps bumping into each other, and the balance that we're supposed to have with the three branches of government also do the same thing. So I think that what we're doing as active activists, the door is always there. We need to kick it in and because it's not supposed to be locked. There is not supposed to be a locked door between us and our elected officials. And we certainly can open the door and say, okay, this is what we want on the table. This is what you need to deal with. This is what you need to change. Or you won't be working here anymore because we need to put somebody there that will do it. And the two-party system is shot. Obviously, as I think all of us agree, and if you don't agree, then that's another subject that we should sit down and talk about. But I wanted to say that because our documents really do its job, regardless of how you feel about why or what the situations were when they were written.
They absolutely did.
Debbie Lynn.
Hi, Debbie Lynn.
There's so many male voices going on here. I just need to add a little bit of feminine wisdom here.
Please.
You know, a lot of people hold the founding documents as sacred and like we can't change them or update them at all. And I think for as much wisdom as they hold, one of the things I learned recently was that there's a lot of the content of our founding documents are actually borrowed from the Iroquois Nation and then adapted to fit the culture, the European culture that our ancestors had as they were founding our country. But a couple of things that they left out, one of them was the role of women in society and then, of course, slavery, which, are the two things that had to be corrected later on. And I just want to say that I think that the Declaration of Independence, especially, and I'm going to work on that one here for just a minute, leave the Constitution aside for a second. The Declaration of Independence, at the time it was written, had specific grievances against the King of England and the taxation issue that were addressed. And it also set a tone for and a level of thinking that was a couple of steps ahead of where the average person was. So there was a level of consciousness that wasn't exactly like, you know, it was more educated than the common person, shall we say. And I think that we have grown into both the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution of our country to the point now where we actually need something to grow into to help propel us into our future. And there's something out there that's circulating from an organization called the Founding Family that is the Declaration of Interdependence, where we actually need to recognize, you know, that if we want to continue living on this planet and not, you know, destroy the planet so it's that we can no longer inhabit it, that there are some things we need to take care of. We need to, you know, stop living like we own it and start partnering and things like that. And there's just a different way of looking at things. And I think that if we had a constitution, a declaration of interdependence and a constitution that was based on principles that were just tweaked a little bit to have more of a balance between individuals and communities so that there's the rights of both are recognized and some of the commons were recognized, that it would actually set that bar a couple of steps ahead of where our average person's education level was and give us something to grow into. And I would so welcome that.
That's fantastic. And 724, I see you there chiming in. I'll get to you in just a second. Go ahead. Did I hear Dan or Matthew, the one who said something?
Yeah, kind of jump on that. The Founding Fathers did a great thing with the Constitution because they realized, Thomas Jefferson said a couple things. Number one, he said after reviewing the Constitution, he said they made a huge mistake with giving the Congress the power to borrow money. And so he wanted that amended. And he also said that I know of no safer place and no better place to put the liberties and rights of the people than with the people themselves. And so they put in a process that allows us to amend the Constitution and shift it toward what we the people believe is best. And while I have absolutely no problem with amending the Constitution, although I may disagree with any amendments raised, that is the process. Where we go wrong is where we don't follow the process, is where we have politicians breaking their oath to the Constitution. If you want to take an oath to a different Constitution, get the rest of the country to agree with you and change the Constitution.
Mm-hmm. Well, right. But, right now we have a system that's so corrupt because it's been purchased.
Absolutely. And they just ignore the Constitution. I mean, if you want
right.
to change the rules, feel free to change them, and please, if it is the will of the people to change them, go for
mm-hmm.
it. But
totally.
Issue I really have and the thing, and I think the Constitution's a good place to get back to start with, so that we can get back to something besides the abject, and I would not stray from calling it tyranny that we're under right now.
Right.
But getting back to the Constitution and then working on what we can work on from there is a good start. And then from there, let's amend the Constitution. I've talked several times with members of Move to Amend, to amend the Constitution on the that corporations should not be citizens.
Right, the citizens of the United States, major part
should not be people.
Should not be yeah,
people.
Absolutely.
Exactly. And they're going about the right way to do it. But let's get to following
the
Constitution.
You know, I read something last week on the show, Daniel, and a lot of people are not aware of the fact that our wonderful Congress, in one United States Code, Article 1, gives corporations the personhood status as part of the definitions in our laws. You know, so and that is what's so amazing, and which is what you're talking about, and how they have changed what the Constitution is all the way about without, in fact, doing it the correct way. And let me bring in one of our callers. This is area code 724. What is your name and where are you calling from?
This is Greg from Pittsburgh. Great show, Bob.
Hey.
And great discussion.
Greg?
I just wanted to add my voice to the heresy of Debbie Lynn's and say that if I hear her correctly, The Constitution is not something that cannot be changed. Clearly, we were given the means by which to do that. And when I hear originalists suggesting that even some of the basic principles are out of bounds, it really gets under my skin to believe that we're living in the 21st century, and we're pretending like people who lived 250 years ago were prescient somehow and got everything right. One of my biggest pet peeves is the Second Amendment. That's an area where I think there's plenty of room for discussion and for change, for interpretation that matches our modern society, and to do that and to have that debate with the understanding and the appreciation that these were guys, men living 250 years ago, making decisions about what it meant to be a well-regulated militia in times of change. So I just wanted to say thanks to Debbie Lynn for bringing up that point, and for your callers, your guests, to also kind of echo that if we don't like the way things are going, we've got the means, we've got the process. It was outlined. They were at least prescient enough to do that so that we could change the way things work in our government. We just need to keep the pressure on to make sure that those changes occur in ways that include and engage more citizens, not exclude citizens.
Well, we have to remember that, and of course, history is something that is replete with lessons, but people don't pay attention to it, in general speaking. But we have a shiny example of what Debbie Lynn, Greg, you, and Daniel were talking about, and Erica 518 will bring you on next in just a second. But all we have to do is think about how many movies that we've seen. If we don't even want to get into this on a serious level, from the standpoint of whether or not we accept that this can happen, is prohibition. We had an amendment that outlawed alcohol. Then we turned around and had an amendment that repealed it. And this happened in 5 seconds, in as far as the history of the world is concerned. The other aspects, the important aspects, of course, the 13th Amendment, the 14th Amendment, which, of course, now made these Bill of Rights apply to the states, for example. All of these things have happened since the first time. And why, as a general rule, nobody gets this as easily as we're discussing it is right now. Absolutely, we should be able to. That's another reason why I say the document bumps into itself, because that is exactly what it did. It made it so it is the old living document. And, of course, for you younger guests, it is not something that you necessarily heard live, but for us older hosts, we used to hear it in the set. It's a living document. It's a living document. It was one of the things that was talked about in school, for example, all the time, that I don't hear about now. It's always been that way, and we cannot lose sight of it. And Greg brought up a point on how, you have these untouchable aspects of the Constitution where people get this mindset, and it's not the right mindset. My mindset is that it's a living document. And on that note, let me bring in area code 518. What's your name and where are you calling from? Oh, I need to turn you on. That would help. I have to turn you on. There you go. Now I turned you on.
Joe Paponi on, and I'm over in New York. Quiet.
How are you doing?
Good topic tonight. The NDAA is not one of my favorite items. But I'll push that aside for now. This thing about the Constitution, I've had discussions with this now recently with my son. And what I would propose to both of you guests is to look at the Constitution as a car. It's a Model T. Okay? We're in the 21st century, okay? And you have a Z06 2013 Corvette. Now, dealing with the Model T, you probably have an easy time working on it and fixing it. going into a Corvette for the year 2013 would prove a little difficult for the average person. Now, the reason I bring that up, I'm not against changes to law. When we go so far as to try to modify things by constitutional amendment, okay, if you know what's involved in that, okay, and the times we live in, all right, it's just not practical.
Well, see, now, Joe, I would disagree with that myself, and I'll tell you why. We just did it in the 90s. You know, that's not that long ago. We just added an amendment to the Constitution in the 90s.
Well, which amendment was that?
27. Amendment 27 saying that essentially no member of Congress can, Congress's pay cannot change until there's an election.
Yeah, and that was 93, I want to say. Does that sound about right? I have to look that up.
Like that.
But yes, I mean, those are actually, I have my Constitution book in my pocket.
Though, Robert, I do want to touch on the living document idea. And referring to it as a living document usually leads down a dangerous path. I would refer to it more as a solid document that can be modified. And the reason I say living document can lead down a dangerous path is if the Constitution is not solid in stone and requires a mass effort to change, then what you have is you have a sort of a pirate code. It's more a set of guidelines. I mean, you know, we don't have to follow it, as the Pirates of the Caribbean Johnny Depp would say.
Sure.
It's like a pirate code, but if we put it in stone and we make sure that we understand that this is something that must be followed, then when we change it, it means something. If we don't put it in stone, if we say, like one of the callers recently said, that you can interpret it. Now, interpreting does not require an amendment. Interpreting is what the Supreme Court has done to say that the TSA body scanners at the airport are constitutional. Interpreting
right.
is what the Supreme Court has done to say that the capture of an American citizen, Hamdi, abroad, and the detention of Hamdi was constitutional in a
right.
military in Guantanamo Bay. This is the same Supreme Court. I mean, I could go on and on and on.
Yeah,
so that's the problem with interpreting a living document. But if you look at it as a solid document, that if we make a change to it, that change is a lasting change. If it were easy to make a constitutional amendment, then constitutional amendments wouldn't mean much. Take art for an example. We look at the value of a piece of art. Also, one of the factors we look at the value of a piece of art and we evaluate it by is how long and how much effort we think the artist took to put into it. Michelangelo's paintings, for example, on the ceiling of Sistine Chapel are not looked at with the same vision, the same eye. They're looked at with much more reverence than a chalk painting on a sidewalk or a bit of an advertisement on a billboard.
Or even a painting time and effort by the same man. Sure.
Exactly. And so we value things often by the amount of effort it takes to put in. And if we can change the Constitution by snapping our fingers, or even a little harder than that, and we have a living document in the Supreme Court, and nine men and women, can decide the ultimate rule of a country, no better than nine kings, an oligarchy. If we allow the Constitution to be a living document to be interpreted, we have taken away the value of amending it in the first place. We've taken away the value of any change.
I like that clarification.
Can I jump in here, please? Then why would you have a Supreme Court? If I'm
well, the Supreme Court is in charge of interpreting the laws that are created. Yes, but they should, in fact. I get where he's coming from in the sense that
Bobby, can I jump in here?
Yeah, go ahead. Now, before you say anything, we have 5 minutes left of the show, so make it quick because I'm going to have to wrap it up. But go ahead.
I will do so. I first of all want to say that I'm actually a believer. I don't think the founding fathers were all that brilliant. I think that I think what they did have was a respect for the idea of the balance of republicanism and of democracy, and that balance is brilliant. But I don't want to give them too much credit for that, because I think anyone in their predicament would have done so. I also want to point out that the Founding Fathers, or I prefer to call them the Framers, very much loved big government. They loved big government. But they didn't love big government in London. They loved big government in Philadelphia. So for anyone who claims that the Founding Fathers were, you know, small government, you know, that's just not true. The very essence of having a constitutional convention indicates that there was an interest in having a federal government, which, of course, is a pro-government position. To the point about the degree to which the Constitution could be amended, I want to be careful that if a constitutional convention were ever to be called, and I know there are some efforts to bring one about now in the wake of Citizens United, such a convention is allowed, anything that convention passes becomes law. So if such a convention were to make themselves a permanent institution, that would be perfectly legal. And I think our document, you know, I think we ought to be careful when we're wordsmithing things, you know, is it a living document, whatever. The fact of the matter, I think, is this. We live in the year 2013. That document was written in the 1780s. And, you know, we need to adjust things in the way that fits our time. But unlike what's happening in other parts of the world, we ought to have a basic principle to guide, a guide of concepts and of virtues and of ideas. And that is pretty much what the Constitution is. What we do with those ideas and those values is up to us. But
on that note, I'm going to have to stop you there. Hold on now. I got to stop you there. I got to get the last word. We have about 2 minutes left. First of all, I want to thank our guests and our callers, of course. Our guest Daniel Johnson from People Against the NDAA, Panda, and from Matthew Monk, Essamore. And all our callers, as always, a pleasure to be a part of such a conscientious and active bunch of people who care about our society and want to make for better change. I appreciate the discussion, and of course, Coffee Party Radio and Coffee Party are all about civil discourse, transpartisan and fact-based discussions and activism. I want to take a moment to make sure that everybody listens tomorrow night. We have The Middle Ground with Michael Charney and Eric Weiler, a conservative and a progressive aspect to the show, combining to create some common ground, some middle ground. We have Lunch with Loudon, Thursday afternoon, 3 o'clock Eastern, 12 o'clock Pacific. And then, of course, we have Politics Done Right on Saturday, 1 o'clock Eastern with Egberto Willis, another wonderful show. All of these shows promote active activism. All of them stand with money in politics, corporate personhood. We work together with Move to Amend. We work together with Free the Elected Society. I want to thank Debbie Lynn Mono for keeping me off from falling off the cliff and making sure that she didn't let go of that rope. And I want to thank everybody for listening, all our listeners, everybody in the chat room. Everybody have a good and safe evening and rest of the week, and I look forward to seeing everybody next week. I'm going to be hosting the show again. I will be announcing the guests later on this week. Thank you very much, and this is Bobby Rodrigo saying good night, and as Janine Loudon says, coffee on.